This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Hello, Greg Jenner here. I'm the host of You're Dead to Me, the BBC comedy show that takes history seriously. Every episode, I pair up a top historian with a fantastic comedian, and we have a lovely, funny, fascinating chat about a different subject from world history. And in this new series, we're beginning with an epic voyage through the story of Homer, the Iliad, and the Odyssey. And that's with Kyle Smith-Bino joining us. And then we'll be learning about Francis Galton and the racist, discredited pseudoscience of eugenics with Desiree Birch. We'll meet many medieval saints in their bone boxes with Rachel Parrott. So if that sounds like your sort of thing, listen to You're Dead to Me wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. Bye.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, David here with a new series of explainers from The Briefing Room. In today's podcast, we look at rare earths and critical minerals. Everyone seems to want them, but what are they and what are they used for? Here with me is Eli Saklatvala, who's head of non-ferrous metal pricing at Argus, a provider of market intelligence for the global commodity markets. Eli Saklatvala, let's talk about rare earths first. What are they?
So rare earths refers to 17 specific minerals or elements. If you were to look at the periodic table, you'd find them largely grouped together. They comprise the lanthanide series plus yttrium and scandium. So it's a group of elements that are chemically similar in properties, although they perform a very diverse range of functions. And we also tend to find them geologically grouped together in the ground. And they're used for all sorts of things. They've become quite famous because we can make very strong magnets out of them, which go into electric vehicles and offshore wind turbines. But they also have loads of other uses in electronics, for example, lots of military applications, and then quite traditional uses like glass making and ceramics and so on. So it's a really diverse group of products.
And very quickly, is there any reason why we call them rare earths?
Well, they are famously within the metals industry, not actually rare. You can find quite sizable rare earth deposits in most continents. They become rare when we actually try to get them out of the ground, process them, refine them and utilise them.
Let's talk about critical minerals. When people are talking about critical minerals, what do they mean?
So critical minerals, it's not really an official term, but roughly we're talking about 50 different minerals, of which the rare earths are 17. So rare earths are a subset within the critical minerals group. These minerals, they're called critical because governments around the world consider them absolutely essential to economic and national security. Essentially, we've got a really big problem if we lose access to them.
Let's talk about the rare earths and the critical minerals together. As you say, the rare earths are a subset of critical minerals. Where do we find them mostly? Where would we need to extract them from?
Well, rare earths production, and if we're talking about the minerals themselves, China, obviously, huge amount over there. And China supplements its own deposits by importing some ores and concentrates from Myanmar, also Laos in Southeast Asia. China's also been importing some rare earth ores from the US as well. Australia has a lot in the ground. There's definitely a lot of potential there. Scandinavia, if we're thinking about Europe, has some massive rare earth deposits, but they're not utilised. Brazil, and then North America as well. There I was just on the rare earths. If we think critical minerals, we've also got to start thinking about Central Africa, for example. The DRC, major source of things like cobalt.
The Democratic Republic of Congo.
That's correct. Major source of things like cobalt and tantalum. Indonesia, really important for nickel and cobalt as well. Russia, still in the mix. If we think about something like titanium, very, very difficult still to unlink Russian titanium from supply chains.
So that's where they are. Now let's talk about how that corresponds to how they get used. Is it hard to process these minerals and rare earths?
In a nutshell, yes. You're talking about high expenditures just to get new refining plants, new processing plants built can be very, very costly. A lot of environmental considerations, which also then collides, of course, with red tape. You can get stuck in long queues waiting to develop permits and things like this. So, yeah, it can be a huge issue across the critical mineral supply chain, developing that processing and refining. And that is why so much of it to this day still happens in China.
So how much of the market does China currently command?
It really varies depending on the mineral. For gallium, for example, and rare earths, we are talking about, 80 to 90% of global supply. Gallium is increasingly used to create very high-tech compound semiconductors. That's basically like a microchip that you'll find in all sorts of different things. Then you have a bit of a sliding scale. You have some other minerals like rhenium and hafnium, where the vast majority of production is outside China, but China really steps in as a major consumer and buyer. I would say if we look at critical minerals as a whole, China is extremely dominant.
So can you take me through possibly a rare earth that takes a lot of processing once you've got it, and what you'd have to do to make it into something useful?
Okay, so if we think about rare earths, you dig some stuff out of the ground. And what you'll usually have in this material that you're holding is a whole combination, a cluster of different rare earth elements that are sort of stuck together. Interwoven in that, you'll also have various impurities. You might also have some radioactive material, which is difficult to handle. And then you've got to go through this process, which we call separation, where you literally have to essentially untangle the rare earth elements from each other because they're so interwoven. And I make that sound fairly simple. It's not. There are lots of very technical processes for this involving things like acid leaching and so on. It's a really multifaceted process and each bit very expensive.
Am I right in thinking that not only is it expensive, but it can be quite a dirty process?
Historically, yes, absolutely. That is, I think, one of the reasons why a lot of Western countries in particular have shied away from doing it sort of on their own ground. We have, to be blunt, allowed China in particular to pick up that environmental footprint, while we have then imported the finished products further down the line. I would say that processes are improving. There is absolutely a drive within the metallurgical industry to clean up the way things are happening. So environmental standards are going up, but it is definitely still a big challenge.
How important are these substances to the move towards renewable energy?
They're absolutely essential in any number of ways. The battery industry has been very high profile in recent years. We make batteries in large part out of critical minerals like lithium, cobalt, manganese, graphite, and nickel. We need those batteries both to put into electric vehicles, but also to underpin the energy grid. We also need to think about how solar panels are made, for example. In order to make a solar panel, you're going to need things like tellurium. Again, a very niche, strange sort of minor metal. It's absolutely essential. So, yeah, critical minerals are absolutely crucial to the energy transition. And that has been one of the driving forces of investment into the mineral space over the past 5 years.
Ellie Saklatvala, thanks very much for listening to This Explainer. We'll be publishing these every week in the new mini-series, so make sure you follow The Briefing Room on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts so that you don't miss an episode when we publish them. And also remember, you can go back and listen to any of our recent episodes on BBC Sounds. They're available now. Until the next time, goodbye.
Hello, Greg Jenner here. I'm the host of You're Dead to Me, the BBC comedy show that takes history seriously. Every episode, I pair up a top historian with a fantastic comedian, and we have a lovely, funny, fascinating chat about a different subject from world history. And in this new series, we're beginning with an epic voyage through the story of Homer, the Iliad, and the Odyssey. And that's with Kyle Smith-Bino joining us. And then we'll be learning about Francis Galton and the racist, discredited pseudoscience of eugenics with Desiree Birch. We'll meet many medieval saints in their bone boxes with Rachel Parrott. So if that sounds like your sort of thing, listen to You're Dead to Me wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you. Bye.